The role of an entrepreneur is to introduce profitable processes, procedures, and products to the world. You were able to take your hobby, your passion, your life, and combine it with your business.
That saved my butt because I wouldn't have been able to start this business.
The beautiful life of entrepreneurship. And you talk about hustle, unfiltered, the good, the bad, the ugly, the beautiful.
But we're here to help anybody that we can.
I was so passionate about what I was doing, it wasn't work for me.
The actual struggles of being an entrepreneur.
Howdy, howdy. We are back today with Entrepreneurs Unfiltered. Jared, I guess we are very, very excited to introduce you guys to Rob Byrode, a good friend of mine that I've known for, I guess, what, 10 years now?
10, yeah.
Yeah, man, we're getting old. But that's the gift and the friendship is something that I wanted to share with you guys, a fellow mentor of mine. We've talked a lot about that on the first couple episodes. And so I'll let him introduce himself here in a few minutes. We wanted to kind of recap the previous episode, and we covered the question, should I start this business? And a couple of things we wanted to remind you about was make sure you ask your mentors, because they are vital in shaping the business with you, because much to your dismay, you probably don't know everything there is to know. So it's a good place to start. And then also checking your heart to make sure you're willing to pivot if the original idea does not work out. How do you go about adapting and evolving so your business survives and then thrives? And then really also kind of reflecting on, are you wanting to start this to be the business owner and show up and do the work? Or are you wanting to start this because you're a natural or a grown-to-be entrepreneur that is wanting to introduce profitable products, processes, and procedures to the world? And then Jared really hit the nail on the head on, is what you're thinking about starting a good business or just a good idea? If you missed that podcast, I encourage you to go back and check it out. I want to kind of hand it over to Rob here and really work out his story, because phenomenal things. Just in the pre-show interview, I was already learning stuff that I known him for 10 years and I didn't know about. So I'm kind of excited to sit here and listen as well. And brief history on us, he was actually my store manager when I started my career at Lowe's. And then he went on to greener pastures, as we all do. And we kind of reconnected through some partnerships with the Bombers several years later, and lots of lunches, coffees, birthdays, tons of different opportunities to just kind of pour into each other's lives. And it's you scratch my back, I scratch yours. And so you want to kind of tell us a little bit about why you first were crazy enough to come on this podcast?
Well, honestly, it was probably one of those crazy lunches you talked about. We kind of dove into a million different ideas, and one of the ideas you had was this, and I thought it was a great idea. So wanted to be able to share my story and hopefully help someone out there that may be in my shoes 5 years ago make the right decisions moving forward. So thanks for having me.
Yeah, for sure. And hello, Jarrett, by the way. We haven't really kind of turned anything over to you yet. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. I'm just over here in the corner today. So
you're in timeout.
Yeah. But no, I'm excited, as always, just because it's one of those things where you get to learn about someone else's story in the business world and how to not screw up sometimes. So I always look forward to those. So.
Yeah, and we were talking earlier about the power of borrowing someone else's diploma. That's why a mentor is so vital, because they walk through things that a good mentor will help you avoid. And I know Rob's helped me on several occasions with that. And so the first question I want to kind of tee you up with is, tell us about your first business and when it got started.
Okay. So
straight to the heart.
Yeah, absolutely. So my first business wasn't even the one we talked about earlier. I was in third grade. And we had an art project where everybody in the class had to make something. And the school actually got to come through the gymnasium and everybody voted on which piece they liked best. And mine happened to be some three-dimensional objects, if you will, that I drew with straight lines. And so people were kind of amazed at the fact that you could make a straight line curve. So anyway, afterwards, I won that competition and people asked me if I would make them one. And so being a very young entrepreneur, I said, sure, for a quarter, I'll make you one. And probably produced, I don't know, five of them. But, you know, hey, I was young and had the idea. And you know, really, I'd say, you know, being an entrepreneur was in my genes. My great-grandfather
That's almost exactly what I'm just laughing because that's what I said on the last podcast. Yeah, I had a similar experience in elementary school selling necklaces.
Puka shells.
Yeah.
For like $10.
No, it wasn't puka shells.
It was like beads and fishing line, but it became a fashion statement. And that was like my first business.
Absolutely.
You know? So it's funny to hear another similar story like that.
Well, you know, and that's the thing, you know, speaking to your point earlier about being able to pivot, you never know where the next great idea is going to come from.
Right.
You know, sitting in a room with you two, I might have an epiphany and go out and start a business. So just
10% comes back to the podcast if you dare.
Honestly, that happens more often than we
probably. It really does, yeah.
Well, that'd be a great business idea.
Yeah, we'll put that in the opportunity folder.
Yeah. I have to pay royalties if I come up with something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We got it documented.
For your edification, I did not sign a contract.
But no, and you know, like part of my story was how I was a fourth generation entrepreneur. And so you were about to tell us about how your grandfather kind of spoke into your life, it sounds like.
Yeah, absolutely. So long story short, my grandfather lived his entire life in a little farming community in Kansas, much kind of like what I'm going to tell you later about my current business is you know, kind of how or what got him started. But as a farmer, he realized that the equipment, the implements that he was using were not good enough for what he wanted them to do. And so he literally sat down, invented, I don't know, 5 or 6 different farm implements that are still used today, patented them, and then sold them.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So I think, to my point earlier, I think it's in my genes, really.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was just born with the need to do my own thing. So not always a good thing, but if you're going to start your own business, you certainly need the motivation and the drive.
Exactly. Well, and you know, I think also as we talk about this, a lot of commonalities are coming about. That's a word, right? Commonality?
Sure.
Yeah, we'll go now.
We'll make it.
There you go. Common occurrences or storylines is surrounding time. For instance, I don't know if you remember this or not, or if I hid it from you, but when I had a 6 a.m. shift at Lowe's, I was very rarely ever on time. And it was something that just I always valued my time as my own. And it was very hard for me to adapt to another man's rules with that. And I mean, with my career with the Bombers, that was one of the things that I kind of navigated my way into was the fact that I didn't have to be there at a certain time or I didn't have to do this as long as I was doing my job, because it was just in my genes, honestly, to be I'm late everywhere I go. That happens. You guys both know that.
Oh, yeah.
I'm working on it, getting better. But what is your opinion on the driving force behind that? One of the beautiful things about being a true entrepreneur is your time is your own. You can do this for your kids. You can do that for your wife or your spouse. And some people, they view that as a negative thing to desire to have that time as your own feature within a small business.
Sure.
What is your opinion on that?
Honestly, you know, I heard it best years and years ago, and I have no idea who said it first, but you would rather work 80 hours for yourself than 40 hours for someone else. And
right.
No truer words.
Yeah.
No truer words have ever been spoken, in my opinion. But to take your point and expand a little bit, recently read an article by Richard Branson, the Virgin Air guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The article, he was talking more along the lines of time off, holiday, you know, for them, our vacation is their holiday. But anyway, he thought it was ludicrous that, you know, we only get 2 weeks here in the United States,
right,
and they get literally months overseas of vacation each year. But the article centered around, and to your point, time management, right? If you're willing to work harder, I think, when it's on your terms than when someone's telling you to do this by
right.
this time on this day. And so his point in the article was, at his company, if something happens and you need 6 weeks off, go for it. Paid. No problem. Do what you need to do. Have a mental health month if that's what it takes. Because he knows when you come back to work, you're going to work twice as hard because of that freedom. Because he gave you the opportunity to go take care of your personal needs, you're going to work twice as hard for him in the long run.
The loyalty that it creates is unprecedented.
Absolutely.
I think you sent me that article, actually, because that sounds familiar.
Yeah. So it was a great article, honestly, you know, about, you know, flexibility and not being on the clock, if mm-hmm. you will. And, you know.
But that also means that you have to be able to create a company to where you're not so dependent on one person's position that they choose to do that, that your company goes downhill.
Absolutely.
And I think that's just as important as creating a great work environment is making sure that your people have the ability to do that. Because even some of my past employers, I felt they're like, oh, hey, go take the weekend off. And I'm like, I can't. I feel like I have so much to do. And then I'm backlogged on Monday and Tuesday. And by the time that happens, then someone's angry at me. I don't want anybody to be angry at me. I want to get the job done, you know?
Sure.
And so I think it's very important to be able to have both of those in place, just for one, to keep your business healthy in general.
Well, and honestly, that all starts with the hiring process.
No, 100%.
If you hire the right people, you don't have to worry about whether they're going to give back when they come back.
Right.
They just are.
Right.
You know, the right people in the right places are going to do the right things.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you need as a business owner.
Yeah.
So.
And you know, Jared, that kind of rings in line with what I was talking about in the previous episode, was the only difference between any business is the talent that's within its walls or mm-hmm. its organization. Because mm-hmm. a lawn service place, the quality of work that's produced is by the people that are committed to the organization. And most people associate the business as the reason why they have a bad experience somewhere. But really, poor customer service falls on the leadership team because of the people they decide to put behind that brand.
Sure.
And that's something that when you were at Lowe's, I remember that we were extremely customer focused and we had the 10-foot rule, and you always engage and you walk them over there and don't be a Stanley Pointer or whatever that was it.
Yeah.
They used to preach back then. But I think that with the start of that new business, it kind of shapes where you have your business at today. So is the other thing I'm curious about is that original business that you had back in Kansas or Kansas City, what fingerprints does it have on the business you have now? Which, I guess before we get to that, let's back up and let's tell them a little bit about your business you have now.
Okay. So right now I own a company called Busy Bees. And what we do is we provide an after school extended learning program for schools in Houston ISD. Would love to do it up here, but unfortunately it's kind of on lockdown up here.
Yeah.
So that came from necessity. Honestly, I question everything. You asked me earlier what my superpower was, and
yeah.
I think that's it. I question mm-hmm. everything. I know first and foremost that I'm not the smartest person in the room, so I like to listen to other people and get their ideas. But then
it might be today, though.
You give me too much credit. But then, you know, I question, why are you doing it this way? Or what makes that successful? And honestly, I think that's helped, you know, kind of curtail some of my wild ideas and focus my energies and efforts on, you know, the heart of my business. But anyway, Busy Bees, to get back to how it started or why I started it, my kids were in an after school program here in the local area, and I wasn't satisfied with the level of service I was getting. Yeah, they were a great daycare. You know, school gets out at 3. I don't get off work till 5:30. You know, what are we going to do for that 2.5 hour period with my 10-year-old? So it was a necessary evil. You know, I paid these folks to take care of my kids. But at the end of the day, there was nothing other than babysitting happening in that facility. And I thought, you know, I can do this way better. I've got some ideas. I know some people. I could make this really work. So I got in contact with some people I knew in Houston. And within 6 months of this genius idea I had, and I mean that sarcastically, because at the time I had no idea what I was doing, I was in a school and it was showtime. So now what? Well, I've got a good friend that is an engineer for NASA. He's actually working on a project, the Astrobot. I'm sure you've seen it, but it's a fully autonomous robot that
That's cool.
they can send out to do spacewalks.
So you ever let people play with that?
I think it's pretty tightly locked
pretty
down.
Down.
Yeah, I don't know that you and I could go in there and take a look. But
we could
something
talk
like FBI,
CIA. You probably have to have a few clearances to get in there. But no, he actually has a nonprofit company that does some really amazing things for kids. And I thought, you know, I need to involve him in my program. So back to what got me into this. I started the program with, I guess, selfish reasons in mind, right? I wanted to give people more than they were getting and from their after school provider. And so he came in, and with my help, we developed a robotics class, an engineering class, a science class. He teaches, he's got interns that do chess with my kiddos. I found a martial arts instructor that comes in once a week and does an hour with the kids. And then we devote an entire hour to homework. Right.
Mm-hmm. Which now, is awesome in itself.
Yes. That's a huge load off for the parents, I bet.
You're a busy person, right? You get off work and go pick the kiddos up and like me, it's always 5:30, 6 o'clock before that happens, right?
Right.
What's the last thing you want to do is come home and do an hour's worth of homework, right? Because then you do an hour of homework, now it's 7. You sit down and eat, 7:30, 8 o'clock, and then it's time for a little junior to get in the bathtub and go to bed and start all over. You get no quality time, zero.
Right.
My thought was, hey, why don't we take that burden off the parents? We have them in our care for 3 hours. Let's make sure that gets done and checked by an instructor. And when they get home, you get to spend quality time. That's kind of the basis of you know, why I did what I did. Now, mistakes, oh boy. We could do an entire show on all the stuff I screwed up.
So. Hey, that'd be a good mini-series. The mistakes I wish I the mistakes I'm thankful I made.
Yeah, things I wish I knew.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I want to back up for a question for you. So you talk about how you do karate. Why didn't you teach the kids the karate yourself?
Personally?
Yeah.
Because I don't know enough to.
But you're the business owner. You're supposed to do everything yourself.
Right. 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 Well, here's the thing, and I know what you're getting at.
Thank you.
Your business is like your baby, right? You raise it, you feed it, you water it. You expect, you know, to have control over every aspect of it. And that is the worst mistake you could ever make in your entire life.
Preach.
You do not have the time to do every single thing for every single person, you know, in a business setting. So I heard it best stated, you hire people to do the stuff you don't like so that you can focus on the things that you do.
Right.
I don't have time to bill. I've got 600 families in my program. I don't have time to sit down every week and bill them. Mm-hmm. I don't have time to see who's paid and call and collect. I don't have time to deal with payroll. You know, those are things that I hire people for because my time is better served ensuring the quality of my program, meeting with new potential clients, you know, and making sure that at the end of the day, we're providing what we advertise.
Right.
Because otherwise, to your point earlier, customer service, if you can't deliver on what you're promising, you're out of business.
Right.
That kind of falls in line with the flat tire analogy that we use is like a small business is very much like driving a car with a flat tire. If the processes and procedures and the level of service is not where it needs to be, and you can pour more clients into it and give it gas and make it go faster, but you're just going to end up damaging that car even more so than if you just take a minute, pause, pull over, change the tire, and then you can go 90 on the Autobahn or whatever it's
Absolutely.
Called.
Right.
One of the reasons why I was excited when you volunteered as tribute to be the first guest to quote one of my favorite movies there because of the experience you bring in.
That's actually a great quote if you think about it for entrepreneurs, right?
Yeah.
Because it is kind of the Hunger Games.
Yeah, pretty much.
So I'm not the only one out there offering my service.
Right.
So
that's true.
I have to be the best.
That's true. And so I'm kind of curious if you can share with us since we're unfiltered here, at what point, because you said you started your business with one campus. I know now that you're at four campuses. What was the growing pains like from going from one to two to three to four? Because we have a lot of talented listeners out there that are going to be probably facing that situation right now. Like my business is aching to grow, but I'm holding it back because I don't know how. Like how what did that look like for you?
Well, and you just said it. That's exactly what I did. Let's start with my failures. The first 2 years, I tried to do everything. And that was, as you can imagine, a complete waste of everyone's time because you know, 90% of what I needed to focus on wasn't getting addressed. So really, it was year three that I started to let go, right? It's my baby. I've raised it. But now I'm going to trust someone else to, you know, to help me take care of it. And in doing so, I actually, without knowing it, I actually put myself in a position where I was able to go out and look for more business, right? I wanted more, right? Everybody does. Everybody wants their business to grow. But I had absolutely no time to try to do that. So hiring the right people, putting them in the right place, you know, I was able to free up my time to go do the things that were important to the business. You know, things that were important to me is every aspect, right? I want to make sure the bills get paid and people get paid and, you know, I collect on the funds. All that's important to me, but I don't have to be the one, right? And so putting those people in place allowed me the flexibility to go out and find new business. That's kind of how it happened. Like I said, we could do an entire show on all the failures. But, you know, one of my first failures was trying to decide what type of business to start. Right. Do I want to be an LLC? Do I want to incorporate, you know, and those things are important that at the time I kind of did some research online and thought I knew what I needed to know and did it. You know, now looking back, I wish I'd have done it differently.
What did you end up going with?
I am an LLC, but unbeknownst to me at the time, I did not work with an attorney, which was a mistake. So if you open a new LLC, you have 1 month, 30 days to tell the IRS that you want to be taxed as a corporation. You can have an LLC and still be a W-2 employee.
Uh-huh.
Okay, but you have a month to make that decision. Well, I found that out year two and a half.
And I found it 4.5 months in right now.
Way too late, right? So now as an owner, I take a draw, right?
Yeah.
And that draw is subject to self-employment taxes. So at the end of the year, I get a bill that's, you know, more than I paid for my first house that I have to pay in taxes.
Jeez,
so,
right.
You know, making those kinds of mistakes early on, I think they were stumbling blocks. You know, they weren't the end, right? Didn't kill my business. But if I had it to do over, those are some of the things I would have focused on.
Well, and it's funny to hear that feedback, because this conversation is one that I asked a lot of the entrepreneurs and small business owners that I spoke with when starting my business. I didn't talk to you about it, stupidly, but I started an LLC too. And one of them advised me, they said, dude, we spent $4,000 on an attorney and he didn't really do a whole lot. And so the opinion I adopted now is, instead of asking if I should have gotten an attorney, I should have asked what attorney I should have gotten.
Absolutely.
And I think that was where I went wrong, being unfiltered on my mistake, because I'm kind of curious to see at the end of my year what my tax bill will be like, because I am also now an owner's draw type of employee.
Absolutely.
Too, because I did not let them know, because I was unaware until 3.5 minutes ago that I had to do that within 30 days.
Luckily, my wife works for a law firm that specializes in
business.
Yeah, so
if they sponsor the podcast, you can mention it.
There you go.
But yeah, and so I guess kind of pivoting here, we've talked a lot about the business side of your life, but the true beautiful life of entrepreneurship is holistically being famous in your own home. And you are, from my experiences, a very good father. And how has owning your own business kind of allowed you to fulfill that calling by God, which is ultimately our number one when it comes to home life?
Absolutely. So yes and no, right? I have bad days just like everyone
sure.
else, but you know, I try to shelter that for my kids as much as possible. But from a history perspective, right, I spent 25 years managing big box stores,
mm-hmm.
25 years of missing birthdays and having to reschedule holidays. And, you know, because guess what? I don't get off on Friday after Thanksgiving just because you're out of school.
Right.
So there was a lot that happened, you know, that I wish I could roll back and do differently. But now I think is even more important. My boys are teenagers. So now they're into so much stuff that it almost worked out, you know, I won't say for the best, because obviously I wish I wouldn't have missed anything. But at the age they're at now, I can really focus and spend the time with them that they're going to
remember
more or less. Right,
yeah.
Right. I'm at this point in their lives, I'm shaping the men that they will be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if I was still in retail, that wouldn't happen.
Right.
Sad state of affairs, but that's just the way it is. So,
and I know we made some retail jokes or what have you, but I would not change my retail career either, because one, you have to be able to smile and grin at someone when they're being absolutely belligerent. I mean, that is a superpower in itself. If you can master that and getting into management like you have been, and I dabbled in it briefly, insanely, but retail has a lot of perks for the short term, as far as development, all the other stuff too. And that's crazy, because there's the age old saying, you know, I'm gonna work like no one's worked so I can live like no one's lived. And my belief is that as a true entrepreneur and not just a small business owner, you can live that life right now as long as you prioritize what's important. For instance, my business is not knocking down six figures a year or what have you. We're doing okay. And I spend pretty much every evening and afternoon with my kid. We're building a clubhouse right now. And I'm okay with that. Like, the world would look at me and say, dude, you should be grinding right now while he's three and he won't remember this. And I'm like, no, I will remember this, and that's what I'm doing it for.
Sure.
And so I guess, how would you help or would you advise someone on that saying of grind now and live later?
I think everybody's situation is different, so it's hard for me to, you know, put everybody in the same bucket. But
right.
Honestly, you know, your relationship with your children and your wife, for that matter, doesn't have to be dictated by your business, no matter what business you're in. So
right.
Even in retail with the crazy hours, you mm-hmm. can still make the time.
Yep.
But, you know, that's the thing. People always say, I don't have time, I don't have time, I don't have time.
And maybe you just have to put down the PlayStation controller.
You have to make the time.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only way it works. So, you know, again, I can't lump everybody into one
right.
one category. But for me, you know, again, to your point, I don't regret my retail years.
Right.
I learned a lot. They were good to me. They paid me well. The biggest regret I have is my daughter, who's 21, by the time she was 11, we'd moved 9 times.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, had to relocate, fortunately not out of the state of Texas, but we relocated literally 9 times from the time that she was in third grade until, or no, I'm sorry, she was in the second grade when we started.
Right.
And when we got here, she was going into junior high. So that's rough. That's rough on a kid. You know, there's long-term lasting effects that you have to think of. You know, she doesn't make friends easily and things like that, you know, and I own that. I feel bad about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I had one thing I could change, that would be it. But, you know, again, you learn as you grow what to do and what not to do.
Right.
And so.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. Jared, you worked briefly in retail, didn't you?
It was short-lived, but yeah, I did. Best Buy. I worked in the computers department. But with that being said, I didn't like retail, but I did learn a lot. So one of the things that I did learn was, you know, what in my department can I push the most to make the company the most amount of money?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's probably the key thing that I did. And at the time, it was printers. The markup on printers, I guess, was crazy. I never really got to see that from
margin. We like margin.
But, well, that and there was the Geek Squad service, because that was literally selling someone air out the door. And they may come back with a problem or two, and then I guess Best Buy catches up with that later on. But the more you could sell now, the more money the company had then. So those two things I learned to sell very well, not the actual computers themselves, because really they only, from what I understood, they only made like 30, 40 bucks off the computers. That was the key accessory to get people in the door to sell all the other stuff. And so,
they call that a loss leader.
Right, right. So, and the fact that, you know, Amazon was starting to be very big on the rise, but you could come into Best Buy and actually put your hands in all the products, and maybe say, oh, hey, we've got that on sale now. And by the way, if you buy this, you also can get a discount off this printer and this like just a full package combo, versus Amazon that piece everything together and all that sort of stuff. So there were definitely some upsides to it. I did not like my bosses. They called me Justin Bieber 2.0 at the time because I had longer hair.
Because you were beautiful, right?
Well, yeah, I guess. I don't know. But I did make some good friends there. But everybody there, for the most, even the managers, I think, besides the GM, because he was the only one that was making like crazy good money, everybody else there, it was considered a stage of their life. Like they knew they weren't going to be at Best Buy forever. Like whatever next, or whatever they were getting ready to do next, Best Buy was just that in between stage, whether they were going to college, whether they were just trying to get into management so that way they could get into management somewhere else. It was never, I want to live and die for this company.
Seasonal.
And I feel like that's probably it for a lot of retail places. And maybe I'm wrong. It probably depends also what retail place and how well they take care of their
employees. Well, and I think you're right. I think that's a common feature or commonality, to go back to that word, is within retail is you don't have the connection to the owners that you do, like small business employees do. The way I bought into the Bombers organization, I had been with 5 other organizations previously and I'd never bought in that way because I didn't see the rise and grind every day from the leaders of the organizations that I worked for, like I did with the Bombers. And to have the people at the top in the trenches with you, it instills something a lot too.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and people in general just suck. Like, I remember you coming there.
That's a quote, people. That'll be on the intro.
Like
people suck.
Yeah, they do. So like when you're in a retail or even in a restaurant setting, you get a lot of like people that aren't happy.
They're just frumpy.
Right. And being in the retail, I felt like you deal a lot. Okay, so business to business, game respects game. You kind of learn to kind of keep your emotions out of it whenever you're talking business with other business owners. So those never really come into play. But as a lower tier retail worker, people just come in pissed off at you for no reason. You're like, I didn't do anything to you. You know, and so I think that also plays another part why a lot of people look at retail as not a long lasting solution to work or to where they want to work. And so,
yeah,
I think that took a big play in it, too, because that's what also came back to me and said, OK, I got to do something different because I don't want to be doing this the rest of my life. And right. that's when I started going working for as a junior electrical engineer at Texas Instruments. And then from there, I went and worked for the government.
Can you talk about that?
No, I didn't really touch about it too much on the last podcast. But
if you don't hear after this podcast, you'll know why.
Radio silence.
To sum up the retail rabbit trail that we did there is don't discount any experience that you have because it all shapes who you will be as an entrepreneur someday. I know my retail experience plays a huge part in it. Old Rob dropping knowledge with the loss leader over here. That was 25 years of experience right there, folks. But another part of your story that I wanted to kind of highlight for the listeners as we start to wrap this up is Livewire.
Livewire, yeah.
Yeah. Kind of tell us about that experience because that's a holistic experience in itself.
Absolutely.
Taking a mature brand and growing it. And
absolutely. So four or five years ago, I guess, I bought started a company, an entertainment company in Houston called Right Road Entertainment. And we did wedding DJs, photo booths, you know, the whole gamut. And then was fortunate enough to be good friends with the gentleman up here that actually started Livewire Event Group in 1986.
He'll be on the podcast. He doesn't know it yet, but he'll be on it.
Okay, yeah. So, you know, 30 plus years of reputation that I was able to just write a check for, which mm-hmm. is insane.
Almost priceless. I don't know how
it was. It really was. You know, being able to already have that reputation and to have the client base from years past. Honestly, you know, I did it for 3 years before I sold it. And we had, here's my third daughter, you know, and you did the first two.
That's
so
cool.
We came back for the third one, you know, and that's huge. You know,
mm-hmm,
repeat business is huge. So it was a fantastic experience. I guess you can take it down to the roots is you got to do what you love, right? If you don't like it, it's going to be a job, you know? If you like what you do, then it doesn't feel like work. And Livewire did not feel like work to me. I love entertaining people. I think I was good at it. I got a lot of compliments and no complaints. So, but at the end of the day, you know, I enjoyed it, so it was worth it. And when I started to, I won't say I lost my love for it. It just started to kind of, the shine kind of wore off of it. So about 3 years into it, I was fortunate enough to be able to sell the business to another good friend of mine and walk away from it. And again, it kind of goes back to that family time, that peace of mind that you're going
to
be there for your kids.
I'm sure you're working a long weekend.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, I work all week at Busy Bees and then have to devote an entire day on Saturday to someone else's wedding, which, you know, is fine. They paid me for it. But at the end of the day, that's a Saturday I didn't get to spend with my kids.
Right.
So.
Yeah, and so if you guys heard paper wrestling, it's because Rob and I had breakfast a couple weeks ago, and I'm a huge note taker. They made fun of me for it earlier.
When he says huge note taker, he keeps like three spirals on him at all times.
I may have like two.
There's two on the desk right now.
Hey, that's how I keep my life in order. But it's really very chaotic, to be honest with you. I need to work on that. But I had a couple things that I starred in my notes that I wanted to kind of ask you about with Livewire was in business, getting to know your competition. If you can kind of recap what we talked about that morning, because it was vital for me to learn too.
Absolutely. It's huge. Everybody needs to do that. If you're not, you're in trouble. But, you know, kind of like I said earlier with Busy Bees, you know, I knew what other people were doing. And so it was easy for me to go in and start something that I didn't invent it. I didn't create childcare by any means. I'm not taking credit for that. I just took it from where it was 5 years ago and amplified it by 10. And now my competitors are looking at me going, wow, we really need to do something different.
Right.
So I got to know, especially with Livewire here in town, there's about three major entertainment companies. And I was fortunate enough to be friends with the owner of one of those companies. And so I was able to get, you know, I won't say inside knowledge, but public knowledge about his business was available to me. And then the other business that was in town, I kind of went by what other people told me, you know,
mm-hmm.
and I'd interview couples and they would come in and say, hey, I just sat down with, you know, XYZ company and they were terrible. And here's why. So it helped me not only know what they had to offer, but it also helped me identify things that were important, right? Because your customer has, especially in weddings, right? They've got an idea in their head. This is exactly what it's going to look like. part of my business plan when I sat down to interview a couple was to find out what that looked like. And I would literally tell them, close your eyes, and in three words, I want you to describe what you see. You're on the dance floor, it's the middle of the night, tell me what you're seeing, you know, and they would sum it up for me, you know, it's elegant, it was fun, or it was, you know, whatever. Well, that told me everything I needed to know as far as what to sell them, right? Because I could sell them the most expensive package I had, I'd make more money, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's not what they wanted. It's right. Not what they needed.
Right.
So getting to know not only your competition, but your customers is huge.
Right.
You have to.
And the thing that I admired about another quote you had during that breakfast was, I quoted you saying, if you don't sign with us, I understand. If we can't do this, then go see my friend at XYZ company.
Absolutely.
You would also refer them to your competitors too as well. Kind of talk a little bit about the value proposition behind that, because that's the guidepost within business we talked about yesterday is if you make decisions that are based on your morals, values, purposes, and practices, then you'll always be doing work that you enjoy. And so kind of elaborate referring them to your competitors.
Sure.
Like, who does that?
Well, yeah, it's a good question, right? And seems kind of stupid, doesn't it? But let me tell you how this works, right? If they aren't going to sign with me, and I know that my competitor is going to take just as good care of them as I would have, but maybe he's $50 cheaper or $100 cheaper in price.
Mm-hmm.
And I refer that couple to that company, I get probably a 70 to 75% return rate in my business. And I don't mean people get married more than once. I mean, they refer someone to me after I've done their wedding. Well, it was probably in the neighborhood of 50% of people that I turned away to my competitors that would still tell people, go talk to Rob.
Right.
And it was just because of the way I treated them. Mm-hmm. They felt respected. They knew that I listened because they said, hey, I can't afford your services.
Right.
And I'm able to provide them with a less costly alternative by going to my competitor. Well, in turn, they're going to turn around and tell their people, their friends and family, how great I was to them. You know, how what a great experience it was. And so, especially in the entertainment business, it's all about reputation. And to your point, internally, my morals, my compass would not allow me to do anything different. You know, if I'm not the person that's going to be able to take care of you, I know who is. So
right.
That was kind of the basis for what I did. Now, I'm not telling you to turn your customers away by any means, but there comes a point in time that you realize what you have, what service or product that you have, you can only discount so far, right?
Right.
Before
for your time.
That's right. That's right. I knew I was the best in town. So you're going to pay for that. You know, if you can't afford it, I completely understand. But if you want the best experience you're possibly going to get that day, you're coming to me. You've got to think the same way about your service or your product, right? If your XYZ product is $100 and this person only has 50, it's okay to say, look, I'm not your guy. I wish you the best, but I'm not going to give it away. You know?
So let me ask you this. So the way I understand the wedding industry, because you turn someone away, it means you're probably going to end up having someone come in and take that same spot.
Absolutely.
So what about for the businesses that don't necessarily have that as an option? Do you think that they should just discount and take the work and then possibly miss something? Like, because there's opportunity costs there, right?
Sure.
But like, I know for me and in my business, there's some businesses that like, I'm like, ooh, I could really use that money. Do I go ahead and knock off $200 a month for them, or do I just not? And I think all that's going to come down to too, as far as what stage your business is in as well.
Sure.
But I think there's a lot of people in the beginning stage that say, should I wait it out or should I just take the first business that comes to me?
That's an excellent point. And I'll tell you, you know, when I started doing photo booths in this area, right, I had them in Houston, but when I brought them here, that same company that I told you I would not refer customers to, they were offering photo booths at literally half the cost.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I couldn't do it, you know. And one event that we were at together, I was able to go up to the owner and say, look, you know, and not price fixing by any means. I'm not saying we did that. But I told him, I'm not in a race to the bottom.
Right.
If you want to give it away, go right ahead. But if you think that undercutting me with every single customer in the long run is going to do you any good, you're wrong.
Right.
You know, all you're doing is driving the price in this market down.
Yep.
And I didn't get in it to be broke. I didn't get into this business so I could work. I got into this business so I could succeed.
Yeah.
So it's you know.
I guess there's somewhere in everybody's business is a threshold.
Right. Like, absolutely.
You're not going to lose money. You don't necessarily want to not make money. Like, you don't want to break even. But at the same time, if you need the work or the business, you know, there might be a time that you have to do it. Maybe it's for one or two clients, and mm-hmm. then I guess you go up. But I was kind of curious on your take on that.
Well, and I was in a unique situation too, that, you know, there was a finite amount of weekends.
Right. Exactly.
And that's DJs. What I mean.
Right. The time, and right.
So maybe you don't sign with me, but he's coming in the door right after you for that same weekend.
Right.
In that instance, I'm actually making money because. Right. But that's not the case for everybody.
Yeah. You know,
different services and products are available.
And that's the thing is, like, with a product-based business, like, you have hard costs and margins and things that you have to pay attention to. And I can understand how entrepreneurs would be more prone to cut their pricing that they committed to on service-based businesses, because I've been tempted, right? So with the executive coaching and development that I do, my price is already building business pricing. Like, there's other people out there that charge more than I do because they have more experience, and I'm building my book of business now. And
sure.
But the thing is that when it comes to living that true, beautiful life of entrepreneurship is I've determined my worth based on this pricing. And if you don't see the value, then either A, you don't trust me, or B, you're not really invested in your personal growth as a business leader at this point in time. So you know what I do. Call me whenever you are ready mm-hmm. to take this seriously, because I take this serious enough that I'm not willing to give up an hour away from my family, my kids, my other clients for less than what I've already determined my market rate
absolutely.
To be.
Right. Your self-worth, that's important.
Right.
That was good.
Yeah. And so thank you for that. Thank you. Someone probably told me that a time or two as well. But that's a great question, because, like, that was remember you and I talked about it at that breakfast that morning. Man, I don't know what the price for this or what have you. Mm-hmm. And ultimately where I got the pricing was I looked at my competitors and I saw what they were pricing. And I was like, well, I know I'm going to do this better than them. But I also need to be realistic about what I have to point to is I'm an undrafted rookie free agent coming into the major leagues right now. I haven't hit a single home run yet, other than I know what my abilities are and what I've done in the minor leagues. So I can't expect freaking Fred McGriff money right now.
Right.
But one day I hope to be there, and I hope to be able to help the next rookie coming behind me 10 years from now, just like you are.
And I think you and I were kind of in the same boat, because I mean, I technically had no experience in marketing working for other businesses.
Yeah.
or anything else. It was kind of like, oh, I've taken everything that I've learned in the past and I can bring it to the table, but the people just don't understand because of the experiences and back mm-hmm. behind it. And so,
well, and the flip side of that too, because there is a flip side, you got to think of it like this too. If your competitors are, you know, X price and you come in a little below because you're not as experienced as them, you got to think about the perception that sends to your customers too, mm-hmm. because think about this. If I've got a brand new Mustang sitting in my driveway with a for sale sign in it, and you happen to know that should be worth about 20 grand, but I've got it listed for 7,500.
What the heck's wrong with it?
What perception am I sending to the mm-hmm. potential right. customer? They're going, well, what's wrong with it?
It looks good, but it's broken somehow.
Yeah, something's wrong. I'm not going to do that. Even though it costs them more to go to the lot and buy it,
uh-huh.
they're going to go to the lot and buy it because, uh-huh. you know what I'm saying? There's peace of mind there. So
right.
don't sell yourself
discount.
Too short.
Right, yeah. right. Yeah. That's what I'm talking about, where there's got to be a threshold to where
absolutely.
You can't sell yourself short from a standpoint. You go to renew a contract or something next year and they turn around and say, whoa, this is like 10 grand more than it was last year. Like, well, I got yep. the experience now. But then you turn away your customer
right.
and then they're also like, okay, well, you kind of just trying to rip me off or something.
It's
you know?
Way easier to offer a discount to someone than it is to raise your price.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
And so start high. If you feel like this customer can't afford it or you can't meet their needs 100%, maybe you discount it 20%. You know,
right.
That's
right.
fine.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But you got to start where you need to start, and then decide from there on a case-by-case basis.
Well, and that's the thing, too, is, like, don't take advantage of people either that have full buy-in. Like, so when I was with the Bombers, my sales process was to learn what their budget and their expectations were, because I didn't want to go build a six-figure package when they could spend $5,000. Mm-hmm. It didn't make a lot of sense. So getting the budgetary constraints out of that initial consultation was huge. And there was times where, like, I would see their goals and I would see what their mission was, and I could know what we could accomplish those for, and the budget they would give me would be two or three times what I could do it for. And they would say a $15,000 budget or what have you, and I knew that we could do it for five. I would tell them that, and I would be like, hey, I know you said this and I can show you what that looks like, but I can do this for five and we can do it really well. And even though I left $10,000 on the table there, I can't tell you how many figures it brought in on referrals saying this guy's going to take care of you.
Business out of it. Yep. That's absolutely right. You and I had that very same experience, as a matter of fact. You sent me a proposal and said, can you do this for $1,000? And I came back and said, nope, but I can do it for $600.
Right.
I wasn't going to gouge you for an extra $400 bucks because you offered it.
Right.
You know, I could have.
I was like, woohoo.
But our relationship was worth more to me than $400.
Yeah.
So. Right. At the end of the day, I knew you'd call back and we'd do something else together.
And that's the thing is, like, if people aren't stupid, especially in our community, the business community is so strong, like the experiences they walk. Mm-hmm. And when people hear about, if I had heard you'd done less for someone else and you gave them way more services, I would have been like, what the heck, dude? I thought we were boys.
Yep.
But
it's market driven to some degree. And, you know, back to your point earlier, it's also you know, your morals determine a lot of how you're going to do business. Right. So,
and that's the hardest thing is just putting, especially a service-based business, is like, what is this worth? You're not going to get it right every single time.
Yep.
I know several entrepreneurs that they did X, Y, and Z, and people laughed at them. Mm-hmm. And then once they kind of aligned with the market and everything like that, then they took off and all that stuff too. But it's definitely a struggle that I went through that I hope you guys listening can kind of take that advice and use it with your other mentors that are speaking to you as well. And so, cognizant of time, we're pushing our limit here. We've taken a lot from you already. And so, any final words of advice or what have you before we sign off here and get you out of here?
Sure. So, you know, this is a copyrighted saying. It's mine personally. There's no, I don't have to quote anybody, but at the end of the day, don't get too busy to do business.
Yeah. Okay? Yes.
That is a huge downfall of a lot of establishments, even big box establishments. People get so task oriented that they forget why they're there.
Yep.
Focus on your customers. It will pay you huge dividends.
Preach. Yeah, so. For sure. Well, guys, Jared, do you have anything before we kind of go to wrap up?
No, I think we just about covered all today.
So. This was awesome. I felt like I got a master class in what is about 45 minutes here or so. Rob, do you have any social handles or contact info you feel like sharing or any other stuff? Or?
Sure. You can visit my website at busybeesas.com or hit me up on Facebook, Rob Byrod.
And that's
B-Y-R-O-A-D.
There we go.
We'll put it in the description.
Yeah, for go. Sure. That's the details guy over there. I'm just the I guess sexy voice. Not brown eyes doesn't work in this one. My go-to. I gotta adopt a new one. But yeah, I'm Colby Street. Colbs45 at Instagram. I guess technically the way kids say it nowadays is at Colbs45. I'm old. And then he's Jared Everett, and very simple, at Jared Everett. Again, links will be in the description. All that fun stuff. Thanks for keeping it hot. Honest, open, and transparent. Rob, we hope to have you back again. You got so many layers that I'd love to share with the listeners that we'll do this again soon. Hit us up, guys, and have a great week. Thanks so much.